Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Letter 27 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Tuesday, January 5th, 1864. We left Siut this afternoon. The captain had announced that we should start at 10 o'clock, so I did not go into the town, but sent Omar to buy food and give my letter and best salam to Wasif. But the men of Darfur all went off declaring that they would stop, promising to cut off the captain's head if he went without them. Hassan Effendi, the Turk, was furious, and threatened to telegraph his complaints to Cairo if we did not go directly, and the poor captain was in a sad quandary. He appealed to me, peaceably sitting on the trunk of a palm tree with some poor fellaheen, of whom more anon. I uttered the longest sentence I could compose in Arabic, to the effect that he was captain, and that while on the boat we were all bound to obey him. Mashallah, one English harem is worth more than 10 men for sense. These Inglesi have only one word, both for themselves and for other people. Dogri, dogri, right is right. This Amira is ready to obey like a mamluk, and when she has to command, phew, with a most expressive toss back of the head. The bank was crowded with poor fellaheen who had been taken for soldiers and sent to await the Pasha's arrival at Girga. 3 weeks they lay there, and were then sent down to Suhaj. The Pasha wanted to see them himself and pick out the men he liked. 8 days more at Suhaj, then to Siut 8 days more, and meanwhile Ismail Pasha has gone back to Cairo, and the poor souls may wait indefinitely, for no one will venture to remind the Pasha of their trifling existence. Voila, voila. While I was walking on the bank with Monsieur and Madame Mounier, a person came up and saluted them whose appearance puzzled me. Don't call me a Persian when I tell you it was an eccentric Bedouin young lady. She was 18 or 20 at most, dressed like a young man, but small and feminine and rather pretty, except that one eye was blind. Her dress was handsome, and she had women's jewels, diamonds, etc., and a European watch and chain. Her manner was excellent, quite ungenert, and not the least impudent or swaggering, and I was told, indeed I could hear, that her language was beautiful, a thing much esteemed among Arabs. She is a virgin and fond of travelling and of men's society, being very clever, so she has her dromedary and goes about quite alone. No one seemed surprised, no one stared, and when I asked if it was proper, our captain was surprised. Why not? If she does not wish to marry, she can go alone. If she does, she can marry. What harm? She is a virgin and free. She went to breakfast with the Mouniers on their boat. Madame Mounier is Egyptian-born, and both speak Arabic perfectly, and the young lady had many things to ask them, she said. She expressed her opinions freely as far as I could understand her. Madame Mounier had heard of her before, and said she was much respected and admired. Monsieur Mounier had heard that she was a spy of the Pasha's, but the people on board the boat here say that the truth was that she went before Said Pasha herself to complain of some tyrannical mutter who ground and imprisoned the fellaheen, a bold thing for a girl to do. To me she seems, anyhow, far the most curious thing I have yet seen. The weather is already much warmer. It is 9 in the evening. We are steaming along, and I sit with the cabin window open. My cough is, of course, a great deal better. Inshallah. Above Kenna, about another 150 miles, it will go away. Today, for the first time, I pulled my cloak over my head in the sun. It was so stinging hot. Quite delicious, and it is the 5th of January. Pourvoirez-vous in the cold. Our captain was prisoner for 3 years at Moscow and at Bakhchisarai, and declares he never saw the sun at all. Hard lines for an Egyptian. Do you remember the cigarettes you bought for me at Osbon? Well, I gave them to the old Turkish Effendi, who is dreadfully asthmatic, and he is enchanted. Of course, five other people came to be cured directly. The rhubarb pills are a real comfort to travelers, for they can't do much harm and inspire great confidence. Luckily, we left all the fleas behind in the fore cabin, for the benefit of the poor old Turk, who, I hear, suffers severely. The divans were all brand new, and the fleas came in the cotton stuffing, for there are no live things of any sort in the rest of the boat. Girga, January 9, 1864. We have put in here for the night. Today we took on board three convicts in chains, two bound for Fazgulo, one for calumny and perjury, and one for manslaughter. Hard labor for life in that climate will soon dispose of them. The third is a petty thief from Kenna, who has been a year in chains in the custom-house of Alexandria, and is now being taken back to be shown in his own place in his chains. The cause célèbre of this country would be curious reading. They do their crimes so differently to us. If I can get hold of any one who can relate a few cases well, I'll write them down. Omar has told me a few, but he may not know the details quite exactly. I made further inquiries about the Bedouin lady, who is older than she looks, for she has traveled constantly for 10 years. She is rich and much respected, and received in all the best houses, where she sits with the men all day and sleeps in the harem. She has been in the interior of Africa and to Mecca, speaks Turkish, and Monsieur Monnier says he found her extremely agreeable, full of interesting information about all the countries she had visited. As soon as I can, I must try and find her out. She likes the company of Europeans. Here is a contribution to folklore, new even to Lane, I think. When the coffee-seller lights his stove in the morning, he makes 2 cups of coffee of the best and nicely sugared, and pours them out all over the stove, saying, God bless or favor Sheikh Shadhili and his descendants. The blessing on the saint who invented coffee, of course, I knew, and often utter, but the libation is new to me. You see, the ancient religion crops up even through the severe faith of Islam. If I could describe all the details of an Arab, and still more of a Coptic, wedding, you would think I was relating the mysteries of Isis. At one house I saw the bride's father looking pale and anxious, and Omar said, I think he wants to hold his stomach with both hands till the women tell him if his daughter makes his face white. It was such a good phrase for the sinking at heart of anxiety. It certainly seems more reasonable that a woman's misconduct should blacken her father's face than her husband's. There are a good many things about harem here which I am barbarian enough to think extremely good and rational. An old Turk of Cairo, who had been in Europe, was talking to an Englishman a short time ago, who politely chaffed him about Mussulman license. The venerable Muslim replied, Pray, how many women have you, who are quite young, seen, that is the Eastern phrase, in your whole life? The Englishman could not count, of course not. Well, young man, I am old, and was married at 12, and I have seen in all my life 7 women. 4 are dead, and 3 are happy and comfortable in my house. Where are all yours? Hassanein Effendi heard the conversation, which passed in French, and was amused at the question. I find that the criminal convicted of calumny accused, together with 29 others not in custody, the Sheikh el-Belid of his place of murdering his servant, and produced a basket full of bones as proof. But the Sheikh el-Belid produced the living man, and his detractor gets hard labor for life. The proceeding is characteristic of the childish ruses of this country. I inquired whether the thief who was dragged in chains through the streets would be able to find work, and was told, Oh, certainly, is he not a poor man? For the sake of God, everyone will be ready to help him. An absolute uncertainty of justice naturally leads to this result. Our captain was quite shocked to hear that in my country we did not like to employ a returned convict. Luxor, January 13, 1864. We spent all the afternoon of Saturday at Kenna, where I dined with the English consul, a worthy old Arab, who also invited our captain, and we all sat round his copper tray on the floor and ate with our fingers, the captain, who sat next to me, picking out the best bits and feeding me and Sally with them. After dinner the French consul, a Copt, one Jesus Buktor, sent to invite me to a fantasia at his house, where I found the Muniers, the Mutter, and some other Turks, and a disagreeable Italian, who stared at me as if I had been young and pretty, and put Omar into a great fury. I was glad to see the dancing girls, but I liked old Said Achmet's patriarchal ways much better than the tone of the Frenchified Copt. At first I thought the dancing queer and dull. One girl was very handsome, but cold and uninteresting. One who sang was also very pretty and engaging, and a dear little thing. But the dancing was contortions, more or less graceful, very wonderful as gymnastic feats, and no more. But the captain called out to one Latifa, an ugly, clumsy-looking wench, to show the sit what she could do. And then it was revealed to me. The ugly girl started on her feet and became the serpent of old Nile, the head, shoulders, and arms eagerly bent forward, waist in, and haunches advanced on the bent knees, the posture of a cobra about to spring. I could not call it voluptuous any more than Racine's Phaedra. It is Venus toute entière à sa proie attachée, and to me seemed tragic. It is far more realistic than the Fandango, and far less coquettish, because the thing represented is au grand sérieux, not travestied, gazé, or played with, and like all such things, the Arab men don't think it the least improper. Of course the girls don't commit any indecorums before European women, except the dance itself. Said Achmet would have given me a fantasia, but he feared I might have men with me, and he had a great annoyance with two Englishmen who wanted to make the girls dance naked, which they objected to, and he had to turn them out of his house after hospitably entertaining them. Our procession home to the boat was very droll. Madame Mounier could not ride an Arab saddle, so I lent her mine and enfourchéd my donkey, and away we went with men running with mashhals, fire baskets on long poles, and lanterns, and the captain shouting out, "Full speed!" and such English phrases all the way, like a regular old salt as he is. We got here last night, and this morning Mustafa Aga and the Nazir came down to conduct me up to my palace. I have such a big rambling house all over the top of the Temple of Kem. How I wish I had you and the chicks to fill it! We had about 20 fellas to clean the dust of 3 years' accumulation, and my room looks quite handsome with carpets and a divan. Mustafa's little girl found her way here when she heard I was come, and it seemed quite pleasant to have her playing on the carpet with a dolly and some sugar-plums, and making a feast for dolly on a saucer, arranging the sugar-plums Arab fashion. She was monstrously pleased with Rainey's picture and kissed it. Such a quiet, nice little brown tot, and curiously like Rainey and walnut juice. The view all round my house is magnificent on every side, over the Nile in front facing northwest, and over a splendid range of green and distant orange-buff hills to the southeast, where I have a spacious covered terrace. It is rough and dusty to the extreme, but it will be very pleasant. Mustafa came in just now to offer me the loan of a horse, and to ask me to go to the mosque in a few nights to see the illumination in honor of a great sheikh, a son of Sidi Hossein or Hassan. I asked whether my presence might not offend any Muslimin, and he would not hear of such a thing. The sun set while he was here, and he asked if I objected to his praying in my presence, and went through his 4 rekahs very comfortably on my carpet. My next-door neighbor, across the courtyard all filled with antiquities, is a nice little Copt who looks like an antique statue himself. I saw Voisinier with his family. He sent me coffee as soon as I arrived, and came to help. I am invited to El Montanay, a few hours up the river, to visit the Mouniers, and to Kenna to visit Said Achmet, and also the head of the merchants there who settled the price of a carpet for me in the bazaar, and seemed to like me. He was just one of those handsome, high-bred, elderly merchants with whom a story always begins in the Arabian Nights. When I can talk, I will go and see a real Arab harem. A very nice English couple, a man and his wife, gave me breakfast in their boat, and turned out to be a business connection of Ross's, of the name Arrowsmith. They were going to Aswan, and I shall see them on their way back. I asked Mustafa about the Arab young lady, and he spoke very highly of her, and is to let me know if she comes here to offer hospitality for me. He did not know her name. She is called El Haga, the Pilgrimess. Thursday. Now I am settled in my Theban palace. It seems more and more beautiful, and I am quite melancholy that you cannot be here to enjoy it. The house is very large, and has good thick walls, the comfort of which we feel today, for it blows a hurricane, but indoors it is not at all cold. I have glass windows and doors to some of the rooms. It is a lovely dwelling. Two funny little owls, as big as my fist, live in the wall under my window, and come up and peep in, walking on tiptoe, and looking inquisitive, like owls in the hieroglyphics, and a splendid Horus, the sacred hawk, frequents my lofty balcony. Another of my contemplar gods I sacrilegiously killed last night, a whip-snake. Omar is rather in consternation, for fear it should be the snake of the house, for Islam has not dethroned the Dai Laris et Tutelaris. I have been sapping at the Alif Bey, ABC, today, under the direction of Sheikh Yusuf. A graceful, sweet-looking young man, with a dark brown face and such fine manners in his fella dress, a coarse brown woolen shirt, a libda, or felt skull-cap, and a common red shawl round his head and shoulders. Riding the wrong way is very hard work. Some men came to mend the staircase, which had fallen in and which consists of huge solid blocks of stone. One crushed his thumb, and I had to operate on it. It is extraordinary how these people bear pain. He never winced in the least, and went off thanking God and the lady quite cheerfully. Till today the weather has been quite heavenly. Last night I sat with my window open, it was so warm. If only I had you all here! How Rainy would play in the temple, Maurice fish in the Nile, and you go about with your spectacles on your nose. I think you would discard frangy dress and take to a brown shirt and a libda, and soon be as brown as any fella. It was so curious to see Sheikh Yusuf blush from shyness when he came in at first. It shows quite as much in the coffee-brown Arab skin as in the fairest European, quite unlike the much lighter-colored mulatto or Malay, who never change color at all. A photographer who is living here showed me photographs done high up the White Nile. One Negro girl is so splendid that I must get him to do me a copy to send you. She is not perfect like the Nubians, but so superbly strong and majestic. If I can get hold of a handsome fellaha here, I'll get her photograph to show you in Europe what a woman's breast can be, for I never knew it before I came here. It is the most beautiful thing in the world. The dancing girl I saw moved her breasts by some extraordinary muscular effort, first one and then the other. They were just like pomegranates and gloriously independent of stays or any support. End of letter 27, read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 28 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Wednesday, January 20th, 1864. I received your welcome letters of December 15th and 25th on Monday, to my great joy, but was much grieved to hear of Thomas's death, and still more so to hear from Janet that Thackeray and Mrs. Allison were dead. She died the morning I left Cairo, so her last act, almost, was to send sweetmeats to the boat after me on the evening before. Poor dear soul, her sweetness and patience were very touching. We have had a week of piercing winds, and yesterday I stayed in bed, to the great surprise of Mustafa's little girl who came to see me. Today was beautiful again, and I mounted old Mustafa's cob pony and jogged over his farm with him, and lunching on delicious sour cream and fatira at a neighboring village, to the great delight of the fellaheen. It was more biblical than ever. The people were all relations of Mustafa's, and to see Sidi Omar, the head of the household, and the young men coming in from the field, and the flocks and herds and camels and asses, was like a beautiful dream. All these people are of high blood, and a sort of roll of battle is kept here for the genealogies of the noble Arabs who came in with Amr, the first Arab conqueror and lieutenant of Omar. Not one of these brown men, who do not own a second shirt, would give his brown daughter to the greatest Turkish pasha. This country noblesse is more interesting to me by far than the town people, though Omar, who is quite a cockney and piques himself on being delicate, turns up his nose at their beggarly pride, as Londoners used to do at bare-legged Highlanders. The air of perfect equality, except as to the respect due to the head of the clan, with which the villagers treated Mustafa, and which he fully returned, made it all seem so very gentlemanly. They are not so dazzled by a little show, and far more manly than the Cairenes. I am on visiting terms with all the county families resident at Luxor already. The Nazir, magistrate, is a very nice person, and my Sheikh Yusuf, who is of the highest blood, being descended from Abul Hajjaj himself, is quite charming. There is an intelligent little German here as Austrian consul, who draws very nicely. I went into his house, and was startled by hearing a pretty Arab boy, his servant, inquire, "Soll ich den Kaffee bringen?" What next? They are all mad to learn languages, and Mustafa begs me and Sally to teach his little girl Zainab English. Friday, 22nd. Yesterday I rode over to Karnak, with Mustafa Sais running by my side. Glorious hot sun and delicious air. To hear the Sais chatter away, his tongue running as fast as his feet, made me deeply envious of his lungs. Mustafa joined me and pressed me to go to visit the Sheikh's tomb for the benefit of my health, as he and Sheikh Yusuf wished to say a fatah for me, but I must not drink wine at dinner. I made a little difficulty on the score difference of religion, but Sheikh Yusuf, who came up, said that he presumed I worshipped God and not stones, and that sincere prayers were good anywhere. Clearly the bigotry would have been on my side if I had refused any longer. So in the evening I went with Mustafa. It was a very curious sight, the little dome illuminated with as much oil as the mosque could afford, and the tombs of Abu el-Hajjaj and his three sons. A magnificent old man, like Father Abraham himself, dressed in white, sat on a carpet at the foot of the tomb. He was the head of the family of Abu el-Hajjaj. He made me sit by, and was extremely polite. Then came the Nazir, the Qadi, a Turk travelling on government business, and a few other gentlemen, who all sat down round us after kissing the hand of the old sheikh. Everyone talked. In fact, it was a soiree for the entertainment of the dead sheikh. A party of men sat at the further end of the place, with their faces to the Qibla, and played on a tarbuka, sort of a small drum stretched on earthenware which gives a peculiar sound, a tambourine without bells, and a little tinkling cymbals fitted on thumb and fingers, crotales, and chanted songs in honor of Muhammad and verses from the Psalms of David. Every now and then one of our little party left off talking and prayed a little or counted his beads. The old sheikh sent for coffee and gave me the first cup, a wonderful concession. At last the Nazir proposed a fatah for me, which the whole group round me repeated aloud, and then each said to me, "Our Lord God bless and give thee health and peace, to thee and thy family, and take thee back safe to thy master and thy children," one adding Amin and giving the salam with the hand. I returned it and said, "Our Lord reward thee and all the people of kindness to strangers," which was considered a very proper answer. After that we went away, and the worthy Nazir walked home with me to take a pipe and a glass of sherbet, and enjoy a talk about his wife and eight children, who were all in Fum el-Bakr, except two boys at school in Cairo. Government appointments are so precarious that it is not worth while to move them up here, as the expense would be too heavy on a salary of £15 a month, with the chance of recall any day. In Cairo or Lower Egypt it would be quite impossible for a Christian to enter a sheikh's tomb at all, above all on his birthday festival and on the night of Friday. Friday, January 29. I have been too unwell to write all this week, but will finish this today to send off by Lady Herbert's boat. The last week has been very cold here, the thermometer at 59 degrees and 60 degrees, with a nipping wind and bright sun. I was obliged to keep my bed for 3 or 4 days, as, of course, a palazzo without doors or windows to speak of was very trying, though far better than a boat. Yesterday and today are much better, not really much warmer, but a different air. The Mulid festival of the Sheikh terminated last Saturday with a procession, in which the new cover of his tomb and the ancient sacred boat were carried on men's shoulders. It all seemed to have walked out of the royal tombs, only dusty and shabby instead of gorgeous. These festivals of the dead are such as Herodotus alludes to, as held in honor of him whose name he dares not mention, him who sleeps in Philae. Only the name is changed, and the mummy is absent. For a fortnight, everyone who had a horse and could ride came and made fantasia every afternoon for 2 hours before sunset, and very pretty it was. The people here show their good blood in their riding. On the last 3 days all strangers were entertained with bread and cooked meat at the expense of the Luxor people, Every house killed a sheep and baked bread. As I could not do that for want of servants enough, I sent 100 piastres, 12 shillings, to the servants of Abu el-Hajjaj at the mosque to pay for the oil burnt at the tomb, etc. I was not well and in bed, but I hear that my gift gave immense satisfaction, and that I was again well prayed for. The Coptic bishop came to see me, but he is a tipsy old monk and an impudent beggar. He sent for tea as he was ill, so I went to see him, and perceived that his disorder was Iraqi. He has a very nice black slave, a Christian, Abyssinian, I think, who is a friend of Omar's, and who sent Omar a handsome dinner already cooked. Among other things, a chicken stuffed with green wheat was excellent. Omar constantly gets dinner sent him, a lot of bread, some dates and cooked fowls or pigeons, and fatira with honey, all tied up hot in a cloth. I gave an old fellow a pill and dosed some days ago, but his dura ilia took no notice, and he came for more, and got castor oil. I have not seen him since, but his employer, Fella Omar, sent me a lot of delicious butter in return. I think it shows great intelligence in these people, how none of them will any longer consult an Arab Hakim if they can get a European to physic him. They now ask directly whether the government doctors have been to Europe to learn Hikmah, and if not, they don't trust them, for poor savages and heathens, ce n'est pas si bête. I had to interrupt my lessons from illness, but Sheikh Yusuf came again last night. I have mastered Abba Shedda o Musbitin, Ibi Shedda o Heftadin, etc. Oh dear, what must poor Arab children suffer in learning ABC? It is a terrible alphabet, and the shekel, points, are desesperant. But now I stick for want of a dictionary. Mr. Arrowsmith kindly gave me Miss Martineau's book, which I have begun. It is true as far as it goes, but there is the usual defect. The people are not real people, only part of the scenery to her, as to most Europeans. You may conceive how much we are naturalized when I tell you that I have received a serious offer of marriage for Sally. Mustafa Aga has requested me to give her to him for his eldest son Said, a nice lad of 19 or 20 at most. As Mustafa is the richest and most considerable person here, it shows that the Arabs draw no unfavorable conclusions as to our morals from the freedom of our manners. He said, of course, she would keep her own religion and her own customs. Said is still in Alexandria, so it will be time to refuse when he returns. I said she was too old, but they think that no objection at all. She will have to say that her father would not allow it, for of course a handsome offer deserves a civil refusal. Sally's proposals would be quite an ethnological study. Mustafa asked what I should require as dowry for her. Fancy Sally as harem of the Sheikh el-Beled of Luxor. I am so charmed with my house that I begin seriously to contemplate staying here all the time. Cairo is so dear now, and so many dead cattle are buried there, that I think I should do better in this place. There is a huge hall, so large and cold now as to be uninhabitable, which in summer would be glorious. My dear old captain of Steamer 12 would bring me up coffee and candles, and if I sap and learn to talk to people, I shall have plenty of company. The cattle disease has not extended above Minia to any degree, and here there has not been a case. Alhamdulillah. Food is very good here, rather less than half Cairo prices even now. In summer it will be half that. Mustafa urges me to stay, and proposes a picnic of a few days over in the tombs with his harem as a diversion. I have got a photo, for a stereoscope, which I send you, of my two beloved, lovely palm trees on the river bank, just above and looking over Philae. Hitherto my right side has been the bad one, but now one side is uneasy and the other impossible to lie on. It does not make me sleep pleasantly, and the loss of my good, sound sleep tries me, and so I don't seem well. We shall see what hot weather will do. If that fails, I will give up the contest, and come home to see as much as I shall have time for of you and my chicks. End of letter 28. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 29 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Austin, Sunday, February 7, 1864. Dearest Mother, We have had our winter pretty sharp for 3 weeks, and everybody has had violent colds and coughs. The Arabs, I mean. I have been a good deal ailing, but have escaped any violent cold altogether, and now the thermometer is up to 64 degrees, and it feels very pleasant. In the sun it is always very hot, but that does not prevent the air from being keen, and chapping lips and noses, and even hands. It is curious how a temperature, which would have been summer in England, makes one shiver at Thebes. Alhamdulillah, it is over now. My poor Sheikh Yusuf is in great distress about his brother, also a young sheikh, i.e., one learned in theology and competent to preach in the mosque. Sheikh Mohammed is come home from studying Al-Azhar at Cairo, I fear to die. I went with Sheikh Yusuf, at his desire, to see if I could help him, and found him gasping for breath and very, very ill. I gave him a little soothing medicine and put mustard plasters on him, and, as it relieved him, I went again and repeated them. All the family and a lot of neighbors crowded in to look on. There he lay in a dark little den with bare mud walls, worse off, to our ideas, than any pauper. But these people do not feel the want of comforts, and one learned to think it quite natural to sit with perfect gentlemen in places inferior to our cattle sheds. I pulled some blankets up against the wall, and put my arm behind Sheikh Mohammed's back to make him rest while the poultices were on him, whereupon he laid his green turban on my shoulder, and presently held up his delicate brown face for a kiss like an affectionate child. As I kissed him, a very pious old mullah said, "Bismillah," in the name of God, with an approving nod, and Sheikh Mohammed's old father, a splendid old man in a green turban, thanked me with effusion, and prayed that my children might always find help and kindness. I suppose if I confessed to kissing a dirty Arab in a hovel, the English travellers would execrate me, but it shows how much there is in Mussulman bigotry, unconquerable hatred, etc., for this family are Sayyids, descendants of the Prophet, and very pious. Sheikh Yusuf does not even smoke, and he preaches on Fridays. You would love these Sayyidis, they are such thorough gentlemen. I rode over to the village a few days ago to see a farmer named Omar. Of course I had to eat, and the people were enchanted at my going alone, as they are used to see the English armed and guarded. Sidi Omar, however, insisted on accompanying me home, which is the civil thing here. He piled on a whole stack of green fodder on his nimble little donkey, and hoisted himself atop of it without saddle or bridle. The fodder was for Mustafa Aga, and we trotted home across the beautiful green barley fields, to the amazement of some European young men out shooting. We did look a curious pair, certainly, with my English saddle and bridle, habit, hat, and feather, on horseback, and Sidi Omar's brown shirt, brown legs, and white turban, guiding his donkey with his chibouk. We were laughing very merrily, too, over my blundering Arabic. Young Heathcote and Strutt called here, but were hurrying up on the river. I shall see more of them when they come down. Young Strutt is so like his mother, I knew him in the street. I would like to give him a fantasia, but it is not proper for a woman to send for the dancing girls, and as I am the friend of the Maun, police magistrate, the Kedi, and the respectable people here, I cannot do what is indecent in their eyes. It is quite enough that they approve my unveiled face, and my associating with men. That is my custom, and they think no harm of it. Tomorrow or next day Ramadan begins at the first sight of the new moon. It is a great nuisance, because everybody is cross. Omar did not keep it last year, but this year he will, and if he spoils my dinners, who can blame him? There was a wedding close by here last night, and about 10 o'clock all the women passed under my windows with cries of joy, as Zagarit, down to the river. I find on inquiry that in Upper Egypt, as soon as the bridegroom has taken the face of his bride, the women take her down to see the Nile. They have not yet forgotten that the old god is the giver of increase, it seems. I have been reading Miss Martineau's book. The descriptions are excellent, but she evidently knew and cared nothing about the people, and had the feeling of most English people here, that the difference of manners is a sort of impassable gulf, the truth being that their feelings and passions are just like our own. It is curious that all the old books of travels I have read mention the natives of strange countries in a far more natural tone, and with more attempt to discriminate character than modern ones, e.g., Niebuhr's travels here and in Arabia, Cook's voyages, and many others. Have we grown so very civilized since 100 years that outlandish people seem like mere puppets and not like real human beings? Miss M.'s bigotry against Copts and Greeks is droll enough, compared to her very proper reverence for him who sleeps in Philae, and her attack upon harems outrageous. She implies that they are brothels. I must admit that I have not seen a Turkish harem, and she apparently saw no other, and yet she fancies the morals of Turkey to be superior to those of Egypt. It is not possible for a woman to explain all the limitations to which ordinary people do subject themselves. Great men I know nothing of, but women can and do, without blame, sue their husbands in law for the full payment of debt, and demand a divorce if they please in default. Very often a man marries a second wife out of duty to provide for a brother's widow and children, or the like. Of course, licentious men act loosely, as elsewhere. Kalulum beni Adam, we are all sons of Adam, as Sheikh Yusuf says constantly, bad, bad, and good, good, and modern travellers show strange ignorance in talking of foreign natives in the lump, as they nearly all do. Monday. I have just heard that poor Sheikh Mohammed died yesterday, and was as usual buried at once. I had not been well for a few days, and Sheikh Yusuf took care that I should not know of his brother's death. He went to Mustafa Aga and told him not to tell anyone in my house till I was better, because he knew what was in my stomach towards his family, and feared I should be made worse by the news. And how often I have been advised not to meddle with sick Arabs, because they are sure to suspect a Christian of poisoning those who die. I do grieve for the graceful, handsome young creature and his old father. Omar was vexed at not knowing of his death, because he would have liked to help carry him to the grave. I have at last learned the alphabet in Arabic, and can write it tidily, but now I am in a fix for want of a dictionary, and have written to Hekekian Bey to buy me one in Cairo. Sheikh Yusuf knows not a word of English, and Omar can't read or write, and has no notion of grammar or of word-for-word interpretation, and it is very slow work. When I walk through the court of the mosque, I give the customary coppers to the little boys who are spelling away loudly under the arcade, Abba Sheda o Nusbeteen, Ibba Sheda o Heftedeen, etc., with a keen sympathy with their difficulties and well-smudged tin slates. An additional evil is that the Arabic books printed in England, and at English presses here, require a 40-horsepower microscope to distinguish a letter. The ciphering is like ours, but with other figures, and I felt very stupid when I discovered how I had reckoned Arab fashion from right to left all my life, and never observed the fact. However, they cast down a column of figures from top to bottom. I am just called away by some poor men who want me to speak to the English travellers about shooting their pigeons. It is very thoughtless, but it is in great measure the fault of the servants and dragomans who think that they must not venture to tell their masters that pigeons are private property. I have a great mind to put a notice on the wall of my house about it. Here, where there are never less than 8 or 10 boats lying for 3 full months, the loss to the fellaheen is serious, and our consul, Mustafa Aga, is afraid to say anything. I have given my neighbors permission to call the pigeons mine, as they roost in flocks on my roof, and go out and say that the Sitt objects to her poultry being shot, especially as I have had them shot off my balcony as they sat there. I got a note from Monsieur Mounier yesterday, inviting me to go and stay at El Mutana, Halim Pasha's great estate, near Edfu, and offering to send his dahabiyah for me. I will certainly go as soon as the weather is decidedly hot. It is now very warm and pleasant. If I find Thebes too hot as summer advances, I must drop down and return to Cairo, or try Suez, which I hear is excellent in summer, bracing desert air. But it is very tempting to stay here. Splendid cool house, food extremely cheap, about £1 a week for 3 of us for fish, bread, butter, meat, milk, eggs, and vegetables, all grocery, of course, I brought with me. No trouble, rest, and civil neighbors. I feel very disinclined to move unless I am baked out, and it takes a good deal to bake me. The only fear is the Khamasine wind. I do not feel very well. I don't ail anything in particular, blood spitting frequent, but very slight, much less cough, but I am so weak and good for nothing. I seldom feel able to go out or do more than sit in the balcony on one side or other of the house. I have no donkey here. The hired ones are so very bad and so dear. but I have written Mounier to try and get me one at El Moutana and send it down in one of Halim Pasha's corn boats. There is no comfort like a donkey always ready. If I have to send for Mustafa's horse, I feel lazy and fancy it is too much trouble, unless I can just go when I want. I have received a letter from Alexandria of January 8. What dreadful weather! We feel the ghost of it here in our 3 weeks of cold. Sometimes I feel as if I must go back to you all coûte de coûte, but I know it would be of no use to try it in the summer. I long for more news of you and my chicks. End of letter 29. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 30 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Ross, Luxor, Tuesday, February 8, 1864. Dearest Child, I got your letter number 3 about a week ago, and 2 others before it. I have been very lazy in writing, for it has been very cold, for Thebes, and I have been very seedy, no severe attack, but no strength at all. The last 3 or 4 days the weather has been warm, and I am beginning to feel better. I send this to Cairo by a clever, pleasant Madame de Belencourt, a daughter of Maréchal Castelaine, who is here in one of the Pasha's steamers. She will call on you when she goes to Alexandria. I have been learning to write Arabic, and I know my letters. No trifle, I assure you. My sheikh is a perfect darling, the most graceful, high-bred young creature, and a Said. These Saidis are much nicer than the Lower Egypt people. They have good Arab blood in their veins, keep pedigrees, and are more manly and independent, and more liberal in religion. Sheikh Yusuf took me into the tomb of his ancestor, Sheikh Abul Hajjaj, the great saint here, and all the company said a fatah for my health. It was on the night of Friday, during the mulid of the sheikh. Omar was surprised at the proceeding, and a little afraid the dead sheikh might be offended. My great friend is the Ma'un, police magistrate here, a very kind, good man, much liked, I hear, by all except the Qadi, who was displeased at his giving the stick to a Mussulman for some wrong to a Copt. I am beginning to stammer out a little Arabic, but find it horribly difficult. The plurals are bewildering, and the verbs quite heartbreaking. I have no books, which makes learning very slow work. I have written to Hekekian Bey to buy me a dictionary. The house here is delightful, rather cold now, but will be perfect in hot weather, so airy and cheerful. I think I shall stay on here all the time. The expense is nil, and it is very comfortable. I have a friend in a farm in a neighboring village, and I am much amused at seeing country life. It cannot be rougher, as regards material comforts, in New Zealand or Central Africa, but there is no barbarism or lack of refinement in the manners of the people. Monsieur Mounier has invited me to go and stay with them at El Montana, and offers to send his dahabiyah for me. When it gets really hot, I shall like the trip very much. Pray, when you see Madame Tastu, say civil things for me, and tell her how much I like the house. I think it wonderful that Omar cooked the dinner without being cross. I am sure I should swear if I had to cook for a heretic in Ramadan. End of letter 30. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 31 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Luxor, February 12, 1864. Dearest Alec, we are in Ramadan now, and Omar really enjoys a good opportunity of making his soul. He fasts and washes vigorously, prays his 5 times a day, goes to mosque on Fridays, and is quite merry over it, and ready to cook infidels' dinners with exemplary good humor. It is a great merit in Muslims that they are not at all grumpy over their piety. The weather has set in since 5 or 6 days like a paradise. I sit on my lofty balcony and drink the sweet northerly breeze, and look at the glorious mountain opposite, and think if only you and the chicks were here it would be the best of life. The beauty of Egypt grows on one, and I think it far more lovely this year than I did last. My great friend, the Ma'un, he is not the Nazir, who is a fat little pig-eyed jolly Turk, lives in a house which also has a superb view in another direction, and I often go and sit on the bench, i.e. the mastaba in front of his house, and do what little talk I can and see the people come with their grievances. I don't understand much of what goes on, as the patois is broad and doubles the difficulty, or I would send you a Theban police report. But the Maun is very pleasant in his manner to them, and they don't seem frightened. We have appointed a very small boy our bawab, or porter, or rather he is appointed himself, and his assumption of dignity is quite delicious. He has provided himself with a huge staff, and he behaves like the most tremendous janissary. He is about Rainey's size, as sharp as a needle, and possesses the remains of a brown shirt and a ragged kitchen duster as a turban. I am very fond of little Achmet, and I like to see him doing the tableaux vivants from Murillo with a plate of broken victuals. The children of this place have become so insufferable about bakshish that I have complained to the Maun, and he will assemble a committee of parents and enforce better manners. It is only here and just where the English go. When I ride into the little villages I never hear the word, but I am always offered milk to drink. I have taken it two or three times and not offered to pay, and the people always seem quite pleased. Yesterday Sheikh Yusuf came again, the first time since his brother's death. He was evidently deeply affected, but spoke in the usual way. It is the will of God, we all must die, etc. I wish you could see Sheikh Yusuf. I think he is the sweetest creature in look and manner I ever beheld, so refined and so simple, and with the animal grace of a gazelle. A high-bred Arab is as graceful as an Indian, but quite without the feline gesmidikeit, or the look of dissimulation. The eye is as clear and frank as a child's. Mr. Ruckel, the Austrian consul here, who knows Egypt and Arabia well, tells me he thinks many of them quite as good as they look, and said of Sheikh Yusuf, "Ihr ist so gemuthlich." There is a German here deciphering hieroglyphics, Herr Dummerkin, a very agreeable man, but he has gone across the river to live at El Kerna. He has been through Ethiopia in search of temples and inscriptions. I am to go over and visit him, and see some of the tombs again in his company, which I shall enjoy, as a good interpreter is sadly wanted in those mysterious regions. My chest is wonderfully better these last 6 or 7 days. It is quite clear that downright heat is what does me good. Moreover, I have just heard from Monsieur Meunier that a good donkey is en route and on a boat from El Montana. He will cost me between £4 and £5, and will enable me to be about far more than I can by merely borrowing Mustafa's horse, about which I have scruples, as he lends it to other lady travellers. Little Achmet will be my sais as well as my doorkeeper, I suppose. I wish you would speak to Layard in behalf of Mustafa Aga. He has acted as English consul here for something like 30 years, and he really is the slave of travellers. He gives them dinners, mounts them, and does all the disagreeable business of wrangling with the Rais and dragomans for them, makes himself a postmaster, takes care of their letters and sends them out to the boats, and does all manner of services for them, and lends his house for the infidels to pray in on Sunday when a clergyman is here. For this he has no remuneration at all, except such presents as the English see fit to make him, and I have seen enough to know that they are neither large nor always gracefully given. The old fellow at Kenna, who has nothing to do, gets regular pay, and I think Mustafa ought to have something. He is now old and rather infirm, and has to keep a clerk to help him. At least, his expenses should be covered. Please say this to Layard from me as my message to him. Don't forget it, please, for Mustafa is a really kind friend to me at all times and in all ways. February 14th. Yesterday we had a dust storm off the desert. It made my head heavy and made me feel languid, but did not affect my chest at all. Today is a soft gray day. There was a little thunder this morning and a few, very few, drops of rain, hardly enough for even Herodotus to consider portentous. My donkey came down last night, and I tried him today, and he is very satisfactory, though alarmingly small, as the real Egyptian donkey always is. The big ones are from the Hejaz. But it is wonderful how the little creatures run along under one as easily as possible, and they have no will of their own. I rode mine out to Karnak and back, and he did not seem to think me at all heavy. When they are overworked and overgalloped, they become bad on the legs and easily fall, and all those for hire are quite stumped up, poor beasts. They are so willing and docile that everyone overdrives them. End of letter 31. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 32 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Austin, Luxor, February 19, 1864. Dearest Mother, I have only time for a few lines to go down by Mr. Strutt and Heathcote's boat to Cairo. They are very good specimens and quite recognized as belonging to the higher people, because they do not make themselves big. I received your letter of January 21st with little darling Rainey's 3 days ago. I am better now that the weather is fine again. We had a whole day's rain, which Herodotus says is a portent here, and a hurricane from the south worthy of the Cape. I thought we should have been buried under the drifting sand. Today is again heavenly. I saw Abd el-Aziz, the chemist in Cairo. He seemed a very good fellow, and was a pupil of my old friend Monsieur Chevreul, and highly recommended by him. Here I am out of all European ideas. The Sheikh el-Arab, of the Abada tribe, who has a sort of town-house here, has invited me out into the desert to the black tents, and I intend to pay a visit with old Mustafa Aga. There is a Roman well in his yard with a ghoul in it. I can't get the story from Mustafa, who is ashamed of such superstitions, but I'll find it out. We had a fantasia at Mustafa's for young Strutt and company, and a very good dancing girl. Some dear old prosy English people made me laugh so. The lady wondered how the women here could wear clothes so different from English females, poor things. But they were not malveillant, only pitying and wonderstruck. Nothing astonished them so much as my salutations with Salim Effendi, the Maun. I begin to feel the time before me to be away from you all very long indeed. But I do think my best chance is a long spell of real heat. I have got through this winter without once catching cold at all to signify, and now the fine weather is come. I am writing in Arabic from Sheikh Yusuf's dictation the dear old story of the barber's brother with the basket of glass. The Arabs are so diverted at hearing that we all know the Alf Layla O Layla, the thousand nights and a night. The want of a dictionary with a teacher knowing no word of English is terrible. I don't know how I learn at all. The post is pretty quick up to here. I got your letter within 3 weeks, you see, but I get no newspapers. The post is all on foot, and can't carry anything so heavy. One of my men of last year, Asgalani the steersman, has just been to see me. He says his journey was happier last year. I hear that Phillips is coming to Cairo, and have written to him there to invite him up here to paint these handsome Saidis. He could get up in a steamer as I did, through Hassanein Effendi, for a trifle. I wish you could come, but the heat here which gives me life would be quite impossible to you. The thermometer in the cold antechamber is now 67 degrees, where no sun ever comes, and the blaze of the sun is prodigious. End of letter 32. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 33 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Luxor, February 26, 1864. Dearest Alec, I have just received your letter of the third instance, and I am glad to get such good tidings. You would be amused to see Omar bring me a letter and sit down on the floor till I tell him the family news, and then, alhamdulillah, we are so pleased, and he goes off to his pots and pans again. Lord and Lady Spencer are here, and his sister, in two boats. The English milord, extinct on the continent, has revived in Egypt, and is greatly reverenced and usually much liked. These high English have mercy in their stomachs, said one of my last year's sailors, who came to kiss my hand, a pleasing fact in natural history. Fawahed Lord was little ragged Achmet's announcement of Lord Spencer. Here's a lord. They are very pleasant people. I heard from Janet today of ice at Cairo and at Shubra and famine prices. I cannot attempt Cairo with meat at 1 shilling 3 pence a pound, and will e'en stay here and grill at Thebes. Mary, come up with your Thebes and savagery. What if we do wear ragged brown shirts? 'Tis manners maketh man, and we defy you to show better breeding. We are now in the full enjoyment of summer weather. There has been no cold for fully a fortnight, and I am getting better every day now. My cough has quite subsided, and the pain in the chest much diminished. If the heat does not overpower me, I feel sure it will be very healing to my lungs. I sit out on my glorious balcony and drink the air from early morning till noon, when the sun comes upon it and drives me under cover. The thermometer has stood at 67 degrees for a fortnight or 3 weeks, rising sometimes to 67, but the people in the boats tell me it is still cold at night on the river. Up here, only a stone's throw from it, it is warm all night. I fear the loss of cattle has suspended irrigation to a fearful extent, and that the harvests of Lower Egypt of all kinds will be sadly scanty. The disease has not spread above Minia, or very slightly, but of course cattle will rise in price here also. Already food is getting dearer here. Meat is 4.5 piastres, 7 pence, the rotil, a fraction less than a pound, and bread has risen considerably. I should say corn, for no bakers exist here. I pay a woman to grind and bake my wheat, which I buy, and delicious bread it is. It is impossible to say how, exactly, like the early parts of the Bible, every act of life is here, and how totally new it seems when one reads it here. Old Jacob's speech to Pharaoh really made me laugh, don't be shocked, because it is so exactly what a fellow says to a pasha. Few and evil have been the days, etc., Jacob being a most prosperous man, but it is manners to say all that, and I feel quite kindly to Jacob, whom I used to think ungrateful and discontented, and when I go to Sidi Omar's farm, does he not say that, take now fine meal and bake cakes quickly, and wants to kill a kid? Fatira, with plenty of butter, is what the three men who came to Abraham ate, and the way that Abraham's chief memluk, acting as vakil, manages Isaac's marriage with Rebekah. All the vulgarized associations with Puritanism and abominable little scripture tales and pictures peel off here, and the inimitably truthful representation of life and character, not a flattering one certainly, comes out, and it feels like Homer. Joseph's tears and his love for his brother, born out of the same mother, is so perfect. Only one sees what a bad inferior race the Beni Israel were compared to the Beni Ishmael or to the Egyptians. Leviticus and Deuteronomy are so very heathenish compared to the law of the Koran or to the early days of Abraham. Verily, the ancient Jews were a foul nation, judging by the police regulations needful for them. Please don't make these remarks public, or I shall be burnt with Stanley and Colenso, unless I suffer Sheikh Yusuf to propose me El Islam. He and Monsieur de Rouget were here last evening, and we had an Arabic soiree. Monsieur de Rouget speaks admirably, quite like an Alim, and it was charming to see Sheikh Yusuf's pretty look of grateful pleasure at finding himself treated like a gentleman and a scholar by two such eminent Europeans. For I, as a woman, am quite as surprising as even Monsieur de Rouget's knowledge of hieroglyphics and Arabic fossia. It is very interesting to see something of Arabs who have read and have the gentleman ideas. His brother, the Imam, has lost his wife. He was married 22 years and won't hear of taking another. I was struck with the sympathy he expressed with the English Sultana, as all the uneducated people say, why doesn't she marry again? It is curious how refinement brings out the same feelings under all dispensations. I apologize to Yusuf for inadvertently returning the Salam Aleikum, peace be with thee, which he said to Omar, and which I, as an unbeliever, could not accept. He colored crimson, touched my hand and kissed his own, quite distressed lest the distinction might wound me. When I think of a young parsonic prig at home, I shudder at the difference. But Yusuf is superstitious. He told me how someone down the river cured his cattle with water poured over a mushaf, a copy of the Koran, and has hinted at writing out a chapter for me to wear as a hijab, an amulet for my health. He is interested in the antiquities and in Monsieur de Rouget's work, and is quite up to the connection between ancient Egypt and the books of Moses, exaggerating the importance of Sayyidina Musa, of course. If I go down to Cairo again, I will get letters to some of the alim there from Abd al-Waris, the imam here, and I shall see what no European but Lane has seen. I think things have altered since his day, and that men of that class would be less inaccessible than they were then. And then a woman who is old, Yusuf guessed me at 60, and educated does not shock, and does not interest them. All the Europeans here are traders, and only speak the vulgarest language, and don't care to know Arab gentlemen. If they see anything above their servants, it is only Turks, or Arab merchants at times. Don't fancy that I can speak at all decently yet, but I understand a good deal, and stammer out a little. End of letter 33. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 34 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Austin, Luxor, March 1, 1864. Dearest Mutter, I think I shall have an opportunity of sending letters in a few days by a fast steamer, so I will begin one on the chance and send it by post if the steamer is delayed long. The glory of the climate now is beyond description, and I feel better every day. I go out early, at 7 or 8 o'clock, on my tiny black donkey, and come in to breakfast around 10, and then go out again about 4. I want to photograph Yusuf for you. The feelings and prejudices and ideas of a cultivated Arab, as I get at them little by little, are curious beyond compare. It won't do to generalize from one man, of course, but even one gives some very new ideas. The most striking thing is the sweetness and delicacy of feeling, the horror of hurting anyone. This must be individual, of course. It is too good to be general. I apologized to him 2 days ago for inadvertently answering the Salam Aleikum, which he, of course, said to Omar on coming in. Yesterday evening he walked in and startled me by a Salam Aleiki addressed to me. He had evidently been thinking it over, whether he ought to say it to me, and come to the conclusion that it was not wrong. Surely it is well for all the creatures of God to speak Salam, peace, to each other, said he. Now no uneducated Muslim would have arrived at such a conclusion. Omar would pray, work, lie, do anything for me, sacrifice money even, but I doubt whether he could utter Salam Aleikum to any but a Muslim. I answered as I felt, Peace, O my brother, and God bless thee. It was almost as if a Catholic priest had felt impelled by charity to offer the communion to a heretic. I observed that the story of the barber was new to him, and asked if he did not know the 1001 Nights. No, he studied only things of religion. No light amusements were proper for an alim, elder of religion. We Europeans did not know that, of course, as our religion was to enjoy ourselves, but he must not make merry with diversions, or music, or droll stories. See the mutual ignorance of all ascetics? He has a little girl, of 6 or 7, and teaches her to write and to read. No one else, he believes, thinks of such a thing out of Cairo. There many of the daughters of the alim learn, those who desire it. His wife died 2 years ago, and 6 months ago he married again a wife of 12 years old. Sheikh Yusuf is 30, he tells me. He looks 22 or 23. What a stepmother and what a wife! He can repeat the whole Quran without a book. It takes 12 hours to do it. He has read the Torah, Old Testament, and the El Anjil, Gospels, of course. Every alim reads them. The words of Sayyidina Isa are the true faith, but Christians have altered and corrupted their meaning. So we Muslims believe. We are all the children of God. I asked if Muslims call themselves so, or only the slaves of God. 'Tis all one, children or slaves. Does not a good man care for both tenderly alike? Pray observe the Oriental feeling here. Slave is a term of affection, not contempt, and remember the centurion's servant, slave, whom he loved. He had heard from Fadl Pasha how a cow was cured of the prevailing disease in Lower Egypt by water weighed against a mushaf, copy of the Koran, and had no doubt it was true. Fadl Pasha had tried it. Yet he thinks the Arab doctors no use at all who use verses of the Koran. Madame de Rouget, the great Egyptologue, came here one evening. He speaks Arab perfectly, and delighted Sheikh Yusuf, who was much interested in the translations of the hieroglyphics, and anxious to know if he had found anything about Musa, Moses, or Yusuf, Joseph. He looked pleased and grateful to be treated like a gentleman and a scholar by such an alim as Monsieur de Rouget and such a sheikha as myself. As he acts as clerk to Mustafa, our consular agent, and wears a shabby old brown shirt or gown and speaks no English, I dare say he not seldom encounters great slights from sheer ignorance. He produced a bit of old Cufic manuscript and consulted Monsieur de Rouget as to its meaning, a pretty little bit of flattery in an Arab alim to a Frenchman, to which the latter was not insensible, I saw. In answer to the invariable questions about all my family, I once told him my father had been a great alim of the law, and that my mother had got ready his written books and put some lectures in order to be printed. He was amazed, first, that I had a mother, as he told me he thought I was 50 or 60, and immensely delighted at the idea. God has favored your family with understanding and knowledge. I wish I could kiss the sheikha, your mother's, hand. May God favor her. Maurice's portrait, as usual, he admired fervently, and said one saw his good qualities in his face, a compliment I could have fully returned, as he sat looking at the picture with an affectionate eye and praying, sotto voce, for El Gedda, El Gamil, the youth, the beautiful, in the words of the Fatha, O give him guidance, and let him not stray into the paths of the rejected. Altogether, something in Sheikh Yusuf reminds me of Worsley. There is the same look of Selene Reinheit, with far less thought and intelligence. Indeed, little thought, of course, and an additional childlike innocence. I suppose some medieval monks may have had the same look, but no Catholic I have ever seen look so peaceful or so unpretending. I see in him, like in all people who don't know what doubt means, that easy familiarity with religion. I hear him joke with Omar about Ramadan, and even about Omar's assiduous prayers, and he is a frequent and hearty laugher. I wonder whether this gives you any idea of a character new to you. It is so impossible to describe manner which gives so much of the impression of novelty. My conclusion is the heretical one, that to dream of converting here is absurd, and I will add, wrong. All that is wanted is general knowledge and education, and the religion will clear and develop itself. The elements are identical with those of Christianity, unencumbered, as that has been, with asceticism and intolerance. On the other hand, the creed is simple, and there are no priests, a decided advantage. I think the faith has remained wonderfully rational, considering the extreme ignorance of those who hold it. I will add Sally's practical remark that the prayers are a fine thing for lazy people, they must wash first, and the prayer is a capital drill. You would be amazed to hear Sally when Omar does not wake in time to wash, pray, and eat before daybreak now in Ramadan. She knocks at his door and acts as a muezzin. Come, Omar, get up and pray and have your dinner. The evening meal is breakfast, and the early morning one dinner. Being a light sleeper, she hears the muezzin, which Omar often does not, and passes on, "The prayers is better than sleep," in a prose version. Ramadan is a dreadful business. Everybody is cross and lazy. No wonder. The camelmen quarreled all day under my window yesterday, and I asked what it was all about. "All about nothing. It is Ramadan with them," said Omar, laughing. "I want to quarrel with someone myself. It is hot today and thirsty weather. Moreover, I think it injures the health of numbers permanently. But of course it is the thing of most importance in the eyes of the people. There are many who never pray at ordinary times, but few fail to keep Ramadan. It answers to the Scotch Sabbath, a comparison also borrowed from Sally. Friday. My friend Salim Effendi has just been here talking about his own affairs and a good deal of theology. He is an immense talker, and I just put Iwas, yes, and La, no, and Sahi, very true, and learn manners and customs. He tells me he has just bought 2 black slave women, mother and daughter, from a Copt for about £35 the 2. The mother is a good cook, and the daughter is for his bed, as his wife does not like to leave Cairo and her boys at school there. It does give one a sort of start to hear a most respectable magistrate tell one such a domestic arrangement. He added that it would not interfere with the Sitel Kabir, the great lady, the black girl being only a slave, and these people never think they have children enough. Moreover, he said he could not get on with his small pay without having women to keep house, which is quite true here, and women are not respectable in a man's house on other terms. Salim has a high reputation, and is said not to eat the people. He is a hot Mussulman, and held forth very much as a very superficial Unitarian might do, evidently feeling considerable contempt for the absurdities, as he thinks him, of the Copts. He was too civil to say Christians, but no hatred, and he is known to show no partiality, only he can't understand how people can believe such nonsense. He is a good specimen of the good, honest, steady-going man of the world Muslim, a strong contrast to the tender piety of dear Sheikh Yusuf, who has all the feelings which we call Christian charity in the highest degree, and whose face is like that of the beloved disciple, but has no inclination for doctrinal harangues like worthy Salim. There is a very general idea among the Arabs that Christians hate the Muslims. They attribute to us the old crusading spirit. It is only lately that Omar has let us see him at prayer, for fear of being ridiculed, but now he is sure that is not so. I often find him praying in the room where Sally sits at work, which is a clean, quiet place. Yusuf went and joined him there yesterday evening, and prayed with him, and gave him some religious instruction quite undisturbed by Sally and her needlework, and I am continually complimented on not hating the Muslims. Yusuf promises me letters to some alim in Cairo when I go there again, that I might be shown the Azhar, the great college. Omar had told him that I refused to go with a janissary from the consul for fear of giving offence to any very strict Muslims, which astonished him much. He says his friends shall dress me in their women's clothes and take me in. I asked whether, as a concealment of my religion, and he said no, only there were thousands of young men, and it would be more delicate that they should not stare and talk about my face. Salim told me a very pretty grammatical quibble about son and prophet, apropos of Christ, on a verse in the Gospel, depending on the reduplicative sign, Sheda, over one letter. He was just as put out when I reminded him that it was written in Greek, as our amateur theologians are if you say the Bible was not originally composed in English. However, I told him that many Christians in England, Germany, and America did not believe that Sayyidina Isa was God, but only the greatest of prophets and teachers, and that I myself was of that opinion. He at once declared that that was sufficient, and that all such had received guidance, and were not among the rejected. How could they be, since Christians only believed the teachings of Isa, which was true, and not the falsifications of the priests and bishops? The bishops always catch it, as schoolboys say. I was curious to hear whether, on the strength of this, he would let out any further intolerance against the Copts, but he said far less, and far less bitterly, than I have heard from Unitarians, and debited the usual most commonplace, common-sense kind of arguments on the subject. I fancy it would not be very palatable to many Unitarians to be claimed mir nix der nix as followers of El Islam, but if people really wish to convert in the sense of improving, that door is open and no other. Monday, the 7th. The steamer has come down already, and will, I suppose, go on tomorrow, so I must finish this letter to go by it. I have not received any letter for some time, and am anxiously expecting the post. We have now settled into quite warm weather ways, no more going out at midday. It is now broiling, and I have been watching 8 tall, fine blacks swimming and capering about, their skins shining like otter's fur when wet. They belong to a galab, a slave dealer's boat. The beautiful thing is to see the men and boys at work among the green corn, the men half naked and the boys wholly so. In the sun their brown skins look just like dark clouded amber, semi-transparent, so fine are they. I rejoice to say that on Wednesday is Bairam, and tomorrow Ramadan dies. Omar is very thin and yellow and headachy, and everyone is cross. How I wish I were going, instead of my letter, to see you all, but it is evident that this heat is the thing that does me good, if anything will. End of letter 34, read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 35 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Luxor, March 7, 1864. Dearest Alec, the real hot weather, speaking after the manner of the English, has begun, and the fine sun and clear air are delicious and reviving. My cough fades away, and my strength increases slowly. One can no longer go out in the middle of the day, and I mount my donkey early and late, with little Achmet trotting beside me. In the evenings comes my dear Sheikh Yusuf, and I blunder through an hour's dictation, and reading of the story of the barber's fifth brother, he with the basket of glass. I presume that Yusuf likes me too, for I am constantly greeted with immense cordiality by graceful men in green turbans, belonging, like him, to the holy family of Sheikh Abu el-Hajjaj. They inquire tenderly after my health, and pray for me, and hope I am going to stay among them. You would be much struck here with the resemblance to Spain, I think. Cosas de España is exactly the Shogel el-Arab, and Don Fulano is the Arabic word Fulan, such a one, as Ojala is Inshallah, plays God. The music and dancing here, too, are Spanish, only more so, and much more. March 10, 1864. Yesterday was Biram, and on Tuesday evening everybody who possessed a gun or a pistol banged away. Every drum and tarabuka was thumped, and all the children hollered, "Ramadan Mat! Ramadan Mat! Ramadan's dead!" about the streets. At daybreak Omar went to the early prayer, a special ceremony of the day. There were crowds of people, so, as it was useless to pray and preach in the mosque, Sheikh Yusuf went out upon a hillock in the burying ground, where they all prayed and he preached. Omar reported the sermon to me, as follows. It is all extempore. First, Yusuf pointed to the graves. Where are all those people? And to the ancient temples. Where are those who built them? Do not strangers from a far country take away their corpses to wonder at? What did their splendor avail them? Etc., etc. What then, O Muslims, will avail that you may be happy when that comes which will come for all? Truly, God is just and will defraud no man, and he will reward you if you do what is right, and that is, to wrong no man, neither in person, nor in his family, nor in his possessions. Cease then to cheat one another, O men, and to be greedy, and do not think that you can make amends by afterwards giving alms, or praying, or fasting, or giving gifts to the servants of the mosques. Benefits come from God. It is enough for you if you do no injury to any man, and above all to any woman or little one. Of course, it was much longer, but this was the substance, Omar tells me. Pretty sound morality, too, methinks, and might be preached with one advantage to a meeting of philanthropists in Exeter Hall. There is no predestination in Islam, and every man will be judged upon his actions. Even unbelievers God will not defraud, says the Quran. Of course, a belief in meritorious work leads to the same sort of superstition as among Catholics, the endeavor to make one's soul by alms, fastings, endowments, etc. Therefore, Yusuf's stress upon doing no evil seems to me very remarkable, and really profound. After the sermon, all the company assembled rushed on him to kiss his head, and his hands, and his feet, and mobbed him so fearfully that he had to lay about him with the wooden sword which is carried by the officiating alim. He came to wish me the customary good wishes soon after, and looked very hot and tumbled, and laughed heartily about the awful kissing he had undergone. All the men embrace on meeting on the festival of Bairam. The kitchen is full of cakes, ring-shaped, which my friends have sent me, just as we see offered to the gods in the temples and tombs. I went to call on the Maon in the evening, and found a lot of people dressed in their best. Half were Copts, among them a very pleasing young priest who carried on a religious discussion with Salim Effendi, strange to say, with perfect good humor on both sides. A Copt came up with his farm laborer, who had been beaten and the field robbed. The Copt stated the case in 10 words, and the Maun sent off his kavass with him to apprehend the accused persons, who were to be tried at sunrise and beaten, if found guilty, and forced to make good the damage. General Hay called yesterday, a fine old blue-eyed soldier. He found a lot of fellaheen sitting with me, enjoying coffee and pipes hugely, and they were much gratified at our pressing them not to move or disturb themselves, when they all started up in dismay at the entrance of such a grand-looking Englishman and got off the carpet. So we told them that in our country the business of a farmer was looked upon as very respectable, and that the general would ask his farmers to sit and drink wine with him. Mush'Allah, Taib Katir, "It is the will of God, and most excellent," said old Omar, my fellow-friend, and kissed his hand to General Hay quite affectionately. "We English are certainly liked here. Salim said yesterday evening that he had often to do business with them, and found them always doggery, straight men, of one word and of no circumlocutions, and so unlike all the other Europeans, and especially the French. The fact is, that few but decent English come here. I fancy our scamps go to the colonies, whereas Egypt is the sink for all iniquity in the south of Europe." A worthy Copt here, one Todorus, took a piece of paper for £20 for antiquities sold to an Englishman, and after the Englishman was gone, brought it to me to ask what sort of paper it was, and how he could get it changed, or was he, perhaps, to keep it till the gentleman sent him the money? It was a circular note, which I had difficulty in explaining, but I offered to send it to Cairo to Briggs's and get it cashed. As to when he would get the money, I could not say, as they must wait for a safe hand to send gold by. I told him to put his name on the back of the note, and Todorus thought I wanted it as a receipt for the money which was yet to come, and was going cheerfully to write me a receipt for the £20 he was entrusting to me. Now, a Copt is not at all green where his pocket is concerned, but they will take anything from the English. I do hope no swindler will find it out. Mr. Close told me that when his boat sank in the cataract, and he remained half-dressed on the rock, without a farthing, four men came and offered to lend him anything. While I was in England last year, an Englishman to whom Omar acted as lacquais de place went away owing him £7 for things bought. Omar had money enough to pay all the tradespeople, and kept it secret for fear any of the other Europeans should say, shame for the English, and did not even tell his family. Luckily, the man sent the money by the next mail from Malta, and the Sheikh of the Dragomans proclaimed it, and so Omar got it, but he would never have mentioned it else. This concealing of evil is considered very meritorious, and where women are concerned, positively a religious duty. Le scandale ainsi qui fait l'offense is very much the notion in Egypt, and I believe that very forgiving husbands are commoner here than elsewhere. The whole idea is found on the verse of the Koran, incessantly quoted, "The woman is made for the man, but the man is made for the woman. Ergo, the obligations to chastity are equal. Ergo, as the men find it difficult, they argue that the women do the same. I have never heard a woman's misconduct spoken of without 100 excuses. Perhaps her husband had slave girls, perhaps he was old or sick, or she didn't like him, or she couldn't help it. Violent love comes by the visitation of God, as our juries say. The man or woman must satisfy it or die. A poor young fellow is now in the Muristan, the madhouse, of Cairo, owing to the beauty and sweet tongue of an English lady whose servant he was. How could he help it? God sent the calamity. I often hear of Lady Ellenborough, who is married to the Sheikh El Arab of Palmyra, and lives at Damascus. The Arabs think it inhuman of English ladies to avoid her. Perhaps she has repented. At all events, she is married and lives with her husband. I asked Omar if he would tell his brother if he saw his wife do anything wrong. N.B. He can't endure her. Certainly not. I must cover her with my cloak. I am told also that among the Arabs of the desert, the real Arabs, when a traveller, tired and wayworn, seeks their tents, it is the duty of his host, generally the sheikh, to send him into the harem and leave him there 3 days, with full permission to do as he will after the women have bathed and rubbed and refreshed him. But he must never speak of that harem. They are to him as his own, to be reverenced. If he spoke, the husband would kill him, but the Arab would never do it for a European, because all Europeans are so hard upon women, and do not fear God and conceal their offences. If a dancing girl repents, the most respectable man may and does marry her, and no one blames or laughs at him. I believe all this leads to a good deal of irregularity, but certainly the feeling is amiable. It is impossible to conceive how startling it is to a Christian to hear the rules of morality applied with perfect impartiality to both sexes, and to hear Arabs who know our manners talk of the English as being jealous and hard upon their women. Any unchastity is wrong and haram, unlawful, but equally so in men and women. Salim Effendi talked in this strain, and seemed to incline to greater indulgence to women on the score of their ignorance and weakness. Remember, I only speak of Arabs. I believe the Turkish ideas are different, as is their whole harem system, and Egypt is not the rule for all Muslims. Saturday, the 12th. I dined last night with Mustafa, who again had the dancing girls for some Englishmen to see. Salim Effendi got the doctor, who was of the party, to prescribe for him, and asked me to translate to him all about his old stomach as coolly as possible. He, as usual, sat by me on the divan, and during the pause in the dancing called El Maghribia, the best dancer, to come and talk. She kissed my hand, sat on her heels before us, and at once laid aside the professional gaillardise of manner, and talked very nicely in very good Arabic, and with perfect propriety, more like a man than a woman. She seemed very intelligent. What a thing we should think it for a worshipful magistrate to call up a girl of that character to talk to a lady! Yesterday we had a strange and unpleasant day's business. The evening before I had my pocket picked in Karnak by two men who hung about me, one to sell a bird, the other of the regular loafers, who hang about the ruins to beg, and sell water or curiosities, and who are all a lazy, bad lot, of course. I went to Salim, who wrote at once to the Sheikh el-Beled of Karnak, to say that we should go over next morning at 8 o'clock to investigate the affair, and desire him to apprehend the men. Next morning Salim fetched me, and Mustafa came to represent English interests, and as we rode out of Luxor, the Sheikh el-Arabda joined us, with four of his tribe with their long guns, and a lot more with lances. He was a volunteer, and furious at the idea of a lady and a stranger being robbed. It is the first time it has happened here, and the desire to beat was so strong that I went to act as consul for the prisoner. Every one was peculiarly savage that it should have happened to me, a person well known to be so friendly to El Musulmin. When we arrived we went into a square enclosure, with a sort of cloister on one side, spread with carpets where we sat, and the wretched fellows were brought in chains. To my horror I found that they had been beaten already. I remonstrated, "What if you had beaten the wrong men? Malaysh, never mind. We will beat the whole village until your purse is found." I said to Mustafa, "This won't do. You must stop this." So Mustafa ordained, with the concurrence of the Ma'un, that the Sheikh el-Beled and the Gefiya, the keeper of the ruins, should pay me the value of the purse. As the people of Karnak are very troublesome in begging and worrying, I thought this would be a good lesson to the said Sheikh to keep better order, and I consented to receive the money, promising to return it and to give a Napoleon if ever the purse comes back with his contents, 3.5 Napoleons. The Sheikh el-Arabda harangued the people on their ill behavior to Harimat, called them Harami, rascals, and was very high and mighty to the Sheikh el-Beled. Hereupon I went away to visit a Turkish lady in the village, leaving Mustafa to settle. After I was gone they beat 8 or 10 of the boys who had mobbed me, and begged with the two men. Mustafa, who does not like the stick, stayed to see that they were not hurt, and so far it will be a good lesson to them. He also had the two men sent over to the prison here, for fear the Sheikh el-Beled should beat them again, and will keep them here for a time. So far so good, but my fear now is that the innocent people will be squeezed to make up the money, if the men do not give up the purse. I have told Sheikh Yusuf to keep watch on how things go, and if the men persist in the theft and don't return the purse, I shall give the money to those whom the Sheikh el-Beled will assuredly squeeze, or else to the mosque of Karnak. I cannot pocket it, though I thought it quite right to exact the fine as a warning to the Karnak mauvais sujet. As we went home, the Sheikh el-Abada, such a fine fellow he looks, came up and rode beside me, and said, "I know you are a person of kindness. Do not tell this story in this country. If Effendina, Ismail Pasha, comes to hear, he may take a broom and sweep away the village." I exclaimed in horror, and Mustafa joined at once in the request, and said, "Do not tell anyone in Egypt. The Sheikh el-Abada is quite true. It may cost many lives." The whole thing distressed me horribly. If I had not been there, they would have beaten right and left, and if I had shown any desire to have anyone punished, evidently they would have half-killed the two men. Mustafa behaved extremely well. He showed sense, decision, and more feelings of humanity than I at all expected of him. Pray do as I begged you. Try to get him paid. Some of the consuls in Cairo are barely civil, and old Mustafa has all the bother and work of the whole of the Nile boats, 85 this winter, and he is boundlessly kind and useful to the English, and a real protection against cheating, etc. End of letter 35. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 36 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mr. Tom Taylor, March 16, 1864. Dear Tom, I cannot tell you how delighted I was to hear that all had gone well with Laura and your little daughter. Mashallah, God bless her. When I told Omar that a friend like my brother, as Arabs say, had got a baby, he proposed to illuminate our house and fire off all the pistols in the premises. Pray give my kind love and best wishes to Laura. I am living here a very quiet, dreamy sort of life in hot Thebes, visiting a little among my neighbors and learning a little Arabic from a most sweet, gentle young sheikh who preaches on Fridays in the mosque of Luxor. I wish I could draw his soft brown face and graceful brown-draped figure, but if I could, he is too devout, I believe, to permit it. The police magistrate, El Moan Salim Effendi, is also a great friend of mine, and the Qadi is civil, but a little scornful, to heretical harem, I think. It is already very hot, and the few remaining travellers' dahabiyas are now here on their way down the river. After that, I shall not see a white face for many months, except Sally's. Sheikh Yusuf laughed so heartily over a print in an illustrated paper, from a picture of Hilton's, of Rebecca at the well, with the old vakil of Sidi Ibrahim, Abraham's chief servant, kneeling before the girl he was sent to fetch like an old fool without his turban, and Rebecca and the other girls in queer fancy dresses, and the camels with snouts like pigs. If the painter could not go to Esh-Sham, Syria, to see how the Arab Bedouin really look, said Sheikh Yusuf, why did he not paint a well in England with girls like English peasants? At least it would have looked natural to English people, and the vakil would not seem so like a Majnun, a madman, if he had taken off a hat. I cordially agreed with Yusuf's art criticism. Fancy pictures of Eastern things are hopelessly absurd, and fancy poems, too. I have got hold of a stray copy of Victor Hugo's Orientales, and I think I never laughed more in my life. The corn is now full-sized here, but still green. In 20 days will be harvest, and I am to go to the harvest home of a fellow friend of mine in a village a mile or two off. The crop is said to be unusually fine. Old Nile always pays back the damage he does when he rises so very high. The real disaster is the cattle disease, which still goes on, I hear, lower down. It has not at present spread above Minia, but the destruction has been fearful. I more and more feel the difficulty of quite understanding a people so unlike ourselves, the more I know them, I mean. One thing strikes me, that like children, they are not conscious of the great gulf which divides educated Europeans from themselves. At least, I believe it is so. We do not attempt to explain our ideas to them, but I cannot discover any such reticence in them. I wonder whether this has struck people who can talk fluently and know them better than I do. I find they appeal to my sympathy and trouble quite comfortably, and talk of religious and other feelings apparently as freely to each other. In many respects they are more unprejudiced than we are, and very intelligent, and very good in many ways, and yet they seem so strangely childish, and I fancy I detect that impression in even Lane's book, though he does not say so. If you write to me, dear Tom, please address me care of Briggs and Company, Cairo. I shall be so glad to hear of you and yours. Janet is going to England. I wish I were going, too, but it is useless to keep trying a hopeless experiment. At present, I am very comfortable in health as long as I do nothing and the weather is warm. I suffer little pain, only I feel weak and weary. I have extensive practice in the doctoring line. Bad eyes, of course, abound. My love to Watts, and give greetings to any other of my friends. I grieve over Thackeray much, and more over his girls' lonely sort of position. I think you would enjoy, as I do, the peculiar sort of social equality which prevails here. It is the exact contrary of French égalité. There are the great and powerful people, much honored, outwardly at all events, but nobody has inferiors. A man comes in and kisses my hand, and sits down off the carpet out of respect, but he smokes his pipe, drinks his coffee, laughs, talks, and asks questions as freely as if he were an effendi or I were a fellaha. He is not my inferior, he is my poor brother. The servants in my friend's house receive me with profound demonstrations of respect and wait at dinner reverently, but they mix freely in the conversation and take part in all amusements, music, dancing girls, or reading of the Quran. Even the dancing girl is not an outcast. She is free to talk to me, and it is highly irreligious to show any contempt or aversion. The rules of politeness are the same for all. The passer-by greets the one sitting still, or the one who comes into a room, those who are already there, without distinction of rank. When I have greeted the men, they always rise, but if I pass without, they take no notice of me. All this is very pleasant and graceful, though it is connected with much that is evil. The fact that any man may be a bey or a pasha tomorrow is not a good fact, for the promotion is more likely to fall on a bad slave than on a good or intelligent free man. Thus the only honorable class are those who have nothing to hope from the great. I won't say anything to fear, for all have cause for that. Hence the high respectability and gentility of the merchants, who are the most independent of the government. The English would be a little surprised at Arab judgments of them. They admire our veracity and honesty, and like us on the whole, but they blame the men for their conduct to women. They are shocked at the way Englishmen talk about harem among themselves, and think the English hard and unkind to their wives, and to women in general. English harimat is generally highly approved, and an Arab thinks himself happy if he can marry an English girl. I have had an offer for Sally from the chief man here for his son, proposing to allow her a free exercise of her religion and customs as a matter of course. I think the influence of foreigners is much more real and much more useful on the Arabs than on the Turks, though the latter show it more in dress, etc. But all the engineers and physicians are Arabs, and very good ones, too. Not a Turk has learnt anything practical, and the dragomans and servants employed by the English have learnt a strong appreciation of the value of a character for honesty, deserve it or no, but many do deserve it. Compared to the couriers and la caisse de passe of Europe, these men stand very high. Omar has just run in to say a boat is going, so good-bye and God bless you. End of letter 36. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.